Welcome, I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. I want to let listeners know Rose is spending the day with her family near the fire-affected areas in the North Bay. She will be back hosting the show tomorrow. Each year, the Earth Island Institute gives its Brower Youth Awards, recognizing the work of six young leaders for their accomplishments in the environmental movement. On today's Your Call, we're joined by three of this year's Brower Award winners. And I have to say, in a time when corporate lobbyists and climate deniers are in top positions in federal agencies whose mission is supposedly to protect our environment, these are young people who can give us hope and remind us it is time to do the work. And we will talk to them about the announcement EPA head Scott Pruitt made that he wants to roll back President Obama's clean power plan later in the hour. But first, let's meet these young people. We'll start with Charlie Jiang, who is a program associate at the nonprofit environmental advocacy group, the Environmental Defense Fund, where he's promoting equity in U.S. climate and energy policy. He's also an organizer for local climate justice group 350 DC and the Sunrise Movement. Actually, there's a number of other things I could read on his resume, but more important to meet you and congratulate you, Charlie, on the Brower Youth Award.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us. Also with us is Anthony Torres, who's a political ecologist, climate activist, whose work focuses on action against fossil fuels in the U.S., in northern India, in the Ecuadorian Amazon, and he's also associate campaign representative at the Sierra Club. And as we say, one of the winners of this year's Brower Youth Awards. Great to have you with us, Anthony.
Thank you for having us.
And our final guest is Deja Powell. She's a senior at Cornell University, studying environment and sustainability. And she founded an organization called Get Them to Green, which aims to foster love for the environment among youth in Chicago, particularly youth of color. Deja, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's nice to be here.
And it's great to have them here. And I want to let everybody know that these awards are given on an annual basis. And there is an awards ceremony that is open to the public that's going to be this next Tuesday, October 17th. There's a reception at 5:30. The actual awards are at 7:30. And they are at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco. You can find all the information about the events and tickets at our website, yourcallradio.org. I want to start just by going around with each of you to hear about the moment when, you know, you're young people, and it's all of us, you know, the environment, these issues, they're around us if we're paying attention. But clearly you are people who've claimed this work, who've decided I have a stake in it and I'm going to do something about it. Let's just do a quick round robin. What was that moment, if there was a moment or a time when you're like, yeah, this is me, I need to do this? Deja, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think I've been super blessed to have had opportunities to kind of travel the world and do like marine biology programs through the Shedd Aquarium in the Bahamas and study in Vietnam, Morocco, and Bolivia. And when I was in high school, I started thinking about like, wow, I have all these really amazing opportunities, but there are a lot of young students, and especially like young students in Chicago, who will never do this, who will never like see coral reef in the Caribbean. And so I thought, if they can't see this, there's a way that I can provide that experience through education. And so kind of like when I was in college and also still learning a lot of really interesting things related to the environment, I tried to figure out how I could best kind of like take that back home. And that's when I started Get Them to the Green, to kind of use education as a vehicle to expose people and kind of like inspire them to become interested in the planet.
So you had this experience. You've gotten to be, as you say, exposed to these different kind of really beautiful parts of our environment, seeing the stresses that the planet's under.
Yeah.
And then you want to bring that back. So briefly, yeah. How do you do that through Get Them to Green?
Yeah. So I started a summer camp 2 years ago through Get Them to the Green, and just kind of like a week on campus at the University of Chicago, teaching kids about like food justice, environmental justice, climate change. We actually had this really exciting debate where like students were like, this is why climate change exists, and this is why humans did that. And then just hearing these kids like spit out the knowledge that they were learning during the camp was really exciting. So the camp was one of the things, or that's one of the ways that I was doing that. And this past spring and summer, I worked with a nonprofit in Chicago, Gardeneers, in my former elementary school. And so I was trying to think about how we could tangibly bring something to young students. And so we created a garden. And so the garden education is happening right now at school in Chicago with the nonprofit. But that's kind of like this space to provide hands-on experiential learning, get kids outside, get kids thinking about agriculture and food and where their food can come from. And so that's been the most exciting thing I've done this year through Get Them to the Green.
That's Deja Powell. Thank you so much. Yeah. Great to have you with us. I'm looking forward to this exchange that's going to happen here this morning. Anthony Torres, for you, what was that turning point, or was there a moment when you said, hey, this is something I need to claim as my own?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up on the shores of Long Island, New York, and just when I was around the time of starting college, my community was severely impacted by Superstorm Sandy. And as someone growing up along the shore and having worked to restore the beaches and really, you know, preserve my neighborhoods, you know, it was shocking to see not only the destruction caused by a fossil fuel perpetuated disaster, but also to see the aftermath where certain communities, certain neighborhoods were restored very quickly, while others, especially Black and brown and low-income communities, were left behind and to this day are still left behind. And, you know, in that moment, I realized that, you know, my work in my local community or at that beach was not going to be up to the task that we are facing. There are culprits who are still causing this crisis that got away with it. And if we are really going to be creating thriving communities for all, we need to take the battle on their turf.
So when you were experiencing Superstorm Sandy, that was in your community, and then you were seeing, of course, the, you know, the destruction and the response to it. At what point were you going saying, like, oh, this is a climate issue? Was that immediate for you? Is that something that came to you from somewhere else? I'm just interested how minds change.
Yeah, for me, I think maybe for all of us, you know, growing up and being the first generation to see the impacts of climate change and to not only learn it in school but to live it, it was an immediate connection. But also as someone who had worked along the Great South Bay and the Atlantic Ocean, I saw over the years how the sea levels were rising, how the ecosystem was changing, and how directly those climate impacts were felt by people. And to see how much that was exaggerated and worsened by Superstorm Sandy and impacted by different communities very differently, it was clear to me the urgency of climate justice.
And then what step did you take? What was so obviously you said, okay, this work here locally isn't up to the task for your judgment of it. What was your kind of first step into doing something beyond that?
Yeah, so I attended school in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and that for me was the location of many of the culprits, not just the fossil fuel CEOs, but also many of the corrupt politicians who, you know, padded their pockets and allowed the planet to burn. And so for me, it was immediately not just getting into the streets, but organizing with my fellow young people and taking the action to Senate offices, taking it to the doorsteps of those who have caused this crisis, and making sure that we hold them accountable and build movements that can include those who don't just see themselves as activists.
I definitely want to get back to talking about those actions that you've been involved in and what you think their impacts are. But I want to go to you, Charlie, and kind of get you, for you, what was your turning point? What was your moment?
Yeah, well, it's interesting for me. I think it was more of a slow burn and continues to be. You know, I'm the son of Chinese immigrants who came here about 30 years ago, and they worked really hard to make sure that my brother and I would have a good life. I actually grew up on the south side of Chicago as well in Hyde Park. And from that vantage point, the inequality, the segregation, the connections between our built environment and racism and wealth were stark and were very clear. I think I was fortunate enough to live on the better side of that and had a lot of opportunities that people just blocks away would never have. But I also grew up a math and science nerd and was on the track to become a physicist and to explore the mysteries of our universe, if you will. and so was sort of not really paying attention, I think, to a lot of the issues that were facing us and that now I work so deeply on. And it was really in college and a sort of slow churn of conversations with the right people and studying the right issues that I really came to see how climate change, which is something I you know, always known was real and was going to happen at some point was actually happening now, far sooner than we ever imagined, and two was deeply connected to issues of race and social justice that I'd always been interested in as well, and could connect back to growing up.
So you were making those connections intellectually. When did you? What was the move to actually taking some action? You thought, oh, I could actually be part of changing what I see in this situation.
Absolutely. I think the second part for me was understanding power and understanding how power works and how we can change that. On campus at Stanford, I had a friend who was working to divest our school from fossil fuels. And he spent the better part of our sophomore year, talking to me about the campaign and about how the effort to make change on campus and to just change the way that we spend our money, our endowment a little bit, could have a huge ripple effect for the rest of the world and for the way that our politics works and that the way that we as a society can seek to address some of these issues rather than running away from them, which we were at the time and still are now. And so I think I saw the opportunity there to organize. And organizing for me meant doing whatever I could, whether it's media or tech support or policy, to just contribute a little bit to that effort, knowing that so many other people are working side by side in unison to take on the fossil fuel CEOs and corrupt politicians that are trying to stymie any efforts we have for our future.
Definitely want to talk about those powerful people who are in the climate denier or worst side of that equation. But I want to let folks know we are talking to three winners of this year's Brower Youth Awards. You just heard from Charlie Jung. He's a founding member of the DC Reinvest Coalition, is involved in a number of other efforts. Also Anthony Torres and Deja Powell, who are all here in San Francisco as part of the Earth Island Institute's Brower Youth Awards, bringing forward the voices of young environmentalists. And hearing the three of you talk, three very different kind of approaches. We're talking about the organizing towards the divestment, hearing about direct action in Washington, and then this effort to say, let's bring young people who may not have had exposure just to seeing the environment and seeing agriculture as part of their lives, even though it is in the background of all of our lives. If you'd like to join this conversation with the Brower Youth Award winners, we invite you to call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. And if you are a young person who's involved in the environmental movement, if you're somebody who has perhaps been an environmentalist for a long time and you're interested in asking questions and being engaged in dialogue, talking about what you think makes change effectively, we invite you to join the conversation, 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. So each of you have kind of taken different paths in terms of the action that you've chosen to take or be involved in. Talk about why you think that the places that you've chosen to work, why you think there's power there. And also when you hear from each other about the work that you do, you know, what questions do you have about, oh, what choices you've made or what you think really works? Deja, let's start with you.
Yeah, so for me, I've seen directly how education has benefited my life and how just knowledge kind of like galvanizes people. And so having like read a lot of Angela Davis and looking at like Black liberation movements and seeing how you see things that like exist but you don't know why they exist, and so you're breaking down these different constructs and structures. And so I've been like, there are so many things that I'm interested in working on right now that are related to food justice and food deserts and food apartheid, and that's because I know that these things exist. And I like to say that you can't fight for issues that you don't know exist. And so just kind of like lifting this veil of, you know, like, these are why Black people live near power plants, or this is why we're living near landfills and incinerators. It's not just like, you know, haphazard. It happens for a reason. And so when you know that, I think you're so much more like inspired to act and angered in a way. And so hopefully it's like turning that anger into action, which is what I don't know so much about. So I'm really excited to hear about the activism part, because I really started with education because it's what's most comfortable.
I have a question. So when you're working with young people,
yeah,
who perhaps have, you know, like they've lived some of these experiences, but they may not be able to make those connections or they haven't had those constructs, how do you talk about those really troubling issues?
Definitely framing it in terms of questions and then further following those answers with more questions. So like, what are grocery stores? Like, what grocery stores do you shop at? And they're like, I mean, my mom has to travel like a couple miles to get to a Jewel's or a Dominix. And it's like, well, what is an abundance in your neighborhood? And it's like liquor stores or convenience stores, or like there are like four McDonald's 2 minutes away. And so it's kind of like following that conversation and not kind of like framing it in the we're victims of the situation, but saying, look, it's really important to know this, and so how can we solve this? And so having conversations about gardens and how they can bring food to areas that don't have them, and kind of like turning it away from this sorrowful, like, man, this is depressing, because it gets super depressing when you think about it, but turning that into like, okay, let's learn about it and then figure out how we can solve it.
Anthony, you've been involved in some direct action. Why you made that? Why was that where you decided to make your decision? Did you feel powerful in that? Do you feel like it makes change?
Absolutely. I chose the path of direct action. In many ways, it chose me. I, in D.C., during the fights against the Keystone XL pipeline and many other battles that our movements have waged in the past couple of years, I saw the power, not only that, that we have power, but that also we can make strategic interventions in our politics that is not just voting. It's actually being able to put ourselves in the hallways of power and make those decision makers uncomfortable, to make them hear our voices to their faces, and also to be able to actually be full characters in the, existential debates that we're having right now about the future of our country and the future of our world.
And so explain what that means.
Yeah. And so right now, we've been living in a time of a movement renaissance. We see young people have built the movements that say Black Lives Matter, that fought fossil fuel CEOs blow for blow, that built the political revolution. And right now, this is the crises that we're facing are tied in terms of, from climate change to racial injustice to our rigged political system. It's really a debate about what it means to be an American and also what it means to be a young person in the 21st century and in this world, and what the future for our generation is going to be.
So when you think about there's confronting corrupt politicians, there's confronting people who are making profit off something you think is destroying the planet. But how do you also think about how you're communicating to those people who may be in a very different place than you are politically or consciously in the middle of that?
Yeah, I think what I think is so important about direct action is it's not just about the target of the office that you may be doing a sit-in in. It's all about also about speaking to your community and your people, and also those who may not see themselves yet as activists or in your movements, but who are in an urgent need for a story that speaks to their lived realities. And that could be about the fact that they don't have enough money to meet to meet their family's needs. That could be that they're facing off against a pipeline that could evict their household. It could be that they're living in the aftermath of a hurricane or a climate disaster. And direct action places you and your fellow participants as the center of the story. A story that can resonate to folks who are just seeing it on a Facebook live feed or in a tweet. And it's bold, and it allows people to make a choice about whether they are with you or whether they're with the culprits you're targeting. And it's one of the most successful ways, I think, that we can build mass movements.
Deja Pal, you want to jump in?
Yeah, also just as a comment to, like, speaking with people who might be on the opposite end of your, like, spectrum, like, of ideologies, but speaking to interest and figuring out, like, what are you interested in? Is it about having a safe environment for your kids in the future? Is it about having jobs in your community? And I've learned that, like, when you remove the ideologies that, like, I'm a Democrat or Republican or I'm this race, when you remove all of that and just figure out what everyone wants, that's a common ground where you can start talking and figuring out, like, how can we move collectively together? And that's very, very important, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, when I was growing up, politics was a taboo discussion that we never had at the dinner table, right? It was what presidents were doing and what Congress was doing. And I think that's not true. Politics is absolutely personal, and it is something that touches our everyday lives. And, you know, I think what many of us who are hoping for a brighter future have seen in the last few years is that, you know, those of us who think we're on the right side of history have really sort of given up that arena in many ways to folks who would seek to profit off of the rest of us. And so I'm really inspired to hear that, you know, what Anthony talked about, direct action and bringing people directly to power. And Deja, who talked about, you know, lesson by lesson, finding the solutions for communities to make their lives better. And I think, you know, the work we're trying to do in D.C. is really a bridge between that. So our campaign, D.C. Reinvest, is an effort to divest from Wells Fargo and other banks that are profiting off of extractive pipeline projects and violations of indigenous rights, but also to take the money that D.C. is currently spending in those banks and reinvest that in tangible community-led solutions that will solve food desert issues in D.C. And ensure that low-income communities have the resources they need to get loans and so forth. And I think, you know, what we're doing in D.C. is really bridging direct action and taking our message to the halls of our city council, but combining that with community events and community-led education and really showing people that this is an issue that is politically relevant, yes, but also deeply relevant for their own lives.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you talk about, like, but there are some people who say, I'm a political activist. I'm someone who that's what I do with my time, whether I get paid for it. I just understand that's part of who I am. But you need to mobilize a lot of people who may never claim that for themselves. I don't know, you know, but to bring them into some sense of, like, this matters to their lives. I think the D.C. Reinvest strategy is interesting, right, because it connects those different parts of the, of the, both the culprit element of it and the service back in the community element of it. Deja, did you want to follow up on what? No, you're good. So we're talking with, this is a great conversation for me as a host, just hearing, I can see the way you all are responding to one another and thinking about, oh, how does this relate to my work? What can I do? What can I take back when I go back to my community and my work from being here at the Brower Youth Awards and try to think about what you want to do next? Let's talk a little more about the specific strategies that you have worked on, Deja. When you hear this, when you hear what Charlie's talking about with this, making this connection between these kind of global things of where are investments for a city going and the very local things about services in the communities, are you seeing action like that in Chicago?
Well, there's a lot going on in Chicago, and there are a lot of people that are working very hard to solve some of the issues of crime and violence and food justice, food insecurity, food deserts. But just hearing about the involvement in politics is something that's interesting for me, because I've always kind of like let politics be politics, because I lost faith in a system because it wasn't doing very much for Black people in America. And so it's interesting to hear about people who are like trying to like knock on the door and say, no, you're not going to give up on us, or we're going to make sure you pay attention to us because we have something to say. And so it's interesting to try to figure out how to meet those two together and try to figure out how we can push policy for better education, because Chicago public schools have a lot to figure out, but pushing for like better funding for schools on the South Side, where there are Black kids who are sitting sometimes and not learning when they should and can be.
And to see those as environmental issues.
Yeah.
Right? Because if there's not that if you don't have that knowledge, there's no way you can take action.
Yeah.
What you're talking about that is really important. This is Your Call. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We are talking with three winners of this year's Brower Youth Awards, Anthony Torres, Charlie Jiang, and Deja Powell. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and we will be right back after this short break.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation today on Your Call. You can call us on the telephone. You can send an email to yourcall@klw.org. Go to the yourcallradio.org website if you'd like to participate in today's show by phone. Call us toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You can also tweet us at Your Call. How have the California wildfires affected you? Tomorrow's 1A with Joshua Johnson will talk about the fires. Record a story on their voicemail, 1A at 855-236-1212. 1A with Joshua Johnson, 11 o'clock this morning here on 91.7 KALW.
You are listening to Your Call. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. She is spending the day in the North Bay with family who are near the fire-affected areas. We expect Rose to be back in the host seat tomorrow. We are podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And when Rose returns tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the wildfires in Sonoma, Napa, and Mendocino, the devastation that they have caused, and the response from the community. And on Friday, it's our media roundtable where we bring together journalists to discuss coverage of the week's news. This week, we're going to be joined by Raisa Robles, who is a Manila correspondent for the South China Post. She's going to be talking about the situation in the Philippines, where we have there's been a lot of political conflict over a deadly and indiscriminate war on drugs, as well as some authoritarian leadership there that deserves our attention. If you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org. That's yourcall@kalw.org. Or you can join the conversation on the phone at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. This morning, we are talking with three inspiring young people, activists, environmentalists, people involved in their communities, also thinking about the world and how to take action in a positive way around it. They're all winners of this year's Brower Youth Awards, which are going to be given out in a public ceremony this upcoming Tuesday, October 17th. At the Herbst Theater in San Francisco. You can find information and tickets at our website, yourcallradio.org. With us today, Charlie Jiang. He's a founding member of the D.C. Reinvest Coalition, which is pressuring the D.C. government to divest from banks with unjust ties to fossil fuel pipelines, private prisons, and predatory lending practices. He's also campaigned against the North Dakota and Keystone pipelines. Also with us, Anthony Torres, climate activist whose work focuses on action against fossil fuels in the U.S., North India, and the Ecuadorian Amazon. He also works with the Sierra Club. And finally, Deja Powell, who founded Get Them to Green, which is an organization that aims to foster love for the environment among Chicago youth, particularly youth of color. And while we were off air, Deja, you were talking about, clearly you are engaging, you're doing a lot of reading.
Yeah, and thinking about a lot.
and you wanted to kind of take the conversation to a different place,
yeah,
based
sure.
on what you're exploring.
So for me, I think a lot about like radical solutions, and I think we've been taught to apply Band-Aid solutions to these issues of like inequality and poverty. And so I spend a lot of time thinking about my work and figuring out like, is education the way to like bring about a transformation? And is that radical enough to get to the like the root of the problem? And so I've been reading a lot of like Angela Davis, some Marx thrown in there, Naomi Klein, and I've kind of, this changes everything. But looking at capitalism and how capitalism is kind of like the root of a lot of the problems that we see in society today, like racism and sexism and environmental degradation. And so I've spent a lot of time thinking about how we bring down this system, especially a system that is like benefiting 1% when the majority of the people on the planet aren't like thriving as the way that they should be. And so I've tried to figure out like either how in your work do you envision taking capitalism down, or how do you like, what is the root in your utopia world? Like, how does that look and how do you get there and what are you doing? Because I think about that so much because I don't have the answers.
Yeah, that reminds me a lot of recently Michelle Alexander, you know, an incredible activist
Jim Crow,
who's...
Is that the new Jim Crow?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she discussed how we have to view our organizing in, you know, in this time since the last election. And the way she put it was, you know, that the Trumps of the world are, in fact, the resistance, not us, the people. That they're the resistance to the future of a better world that that we are building in our communities, in the streets, and in those decision makers' offices. And you know, they'll try to distract us, overwhelm us, and even kill us if that means, you know, preserving an America and a world that only works for the few men who look and live like them. But I think the key there is what she's saying is that we have to make sure we're not just being reactionary, that we actually don't just have to resist. which I think is so much of the work that you both are doing. It's actually, you know, building a revolutionary movement towards building a society that for the first time works for all of us. And that means not privileging capital, not privileging whiteness. That means actually building in alternatives that work for thriving and healthy communities, yeah, and that lead with our values for environmental justice for all, which are non-negotiable.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Anthony, that's totally right.
Yeah.
I think when we talk about capitalism, it's important to sort of break down what we mean by that, since it's such a lofty word so misused now. And I think, you know, I think there are a couple of things that are really important here. One is the capitalism that we're seeing these days is rampant runaway greed, basically, in which a handful of older white men generally, but not exclusively, are sort of allocating and taking up so much of the wealth and the resources. And, you know, with climate change, we are seeing sort of the culmination of the damage that that can do, in which everything, our planet itself and all our people are put in harm's way by their actions. I think the other thing we can talk about is you know, the sort of more fundamental profit motive in which where we live in a society, a system that sort of prioritizes individuals gaining and sort of
neoliberalism
and the individual over the collective,
yes.
and yeah, I think the answer to both of that is what you would say, or radical solutions, or I would say visionary solutions, in which we are aiming to build a society that looks like one of community, founded in community rather than individuals.
I want to talk about how we make that connection between the vision and the reality, which is often, there can be such a gap there. I think people find that a little bit unimaginable.
Totally.
But I first want to bring in a caller who's called in, Greg in Palo Alto. Thanks so much for joining the conversation on Your Call. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. I hope my radio is not going to cause too many problems here.
We hear you fine.
Okay, great. First of all, I want to congratulate your guests on what they're doing. Glad to hear that their economic analysis deals with capitalism, because I think that's one of the basic issues that we're confronting in so many other areas, as well as this whole issue of climate change. I think what I'm concerned about, though, is this, and I live in a place in Palo Alto where, you know, we've got two institutions here, both the city and Stanford, and I'm afraid that unfortunately it seems like too many people in this country are really living in denial. I don't know about other countries, but here, instead of having a mass movement to try and move towards some kind of society where this issue is really at the top of the list of things that need to be done, witness the fires that are going on in California right now. I just don't know how to get that message out to develop some kind of just incredibly mass movement. I'm sure your guests are much more savvy than I am about social media, but it seems to me that that's one place that perhaps this might be able to get done. And hopefully they will keep up this work, and before it's not too late, because at this point I think it's a race.
Yeah.
thanks again.
Greg, thanks so much for your call.
As a comment, I was just reading a book by Noam Chomsky about Occupy Wall Street, and I was learning about kind of like the organizing that was happening. And I think about how beneficial that would have been had so many more people been involved, because it's kind of like speaking to, like, there are millions of us in America who aren't benefiting from the system. And so why aren't we all rising up and saying, like, you're not going to profit off of our exploitation or oppression? And I also don't know, how do we mobilize people? And I'm, for me, it's looking at Get Them to the Green and trying to use education to say, like, this exists. But I don't even know if that's enough. Like, and I think it's also breaking down these barriers and not operating within silos of, like, this is a Black community and we know what we want to do, or we're operating in this space. It's kind of like getting rid of all of that and just starting to work together, because capitalism benefits from that, from dividing people. And I think we just have to figure out how to have these conversations with people who are different from us and try to unite together. But
what about, so Greg was asking in particular about tools of social media as a way to get beyond the silos. Do you see that working? How do you think about it?
Yeah, thank you so much, Greg, for that question. And I think social media has been, when you mentioned Occupy Wall Street, it reminds me of how we need a strategy, not a fad. And Occupy Wall Street and social media that helped amplify that effort and so many others is a tool. It's not a strategy. And so social media can be an amazing way in which we break down silos. We speak to people, you know, across communities, across neighborhoods. But it's a way to absorb people, to get them in the door. It's a way to say, okay, they can retweet, they can like, they can share an article, they can start deepening their own education and analysis. But that's the moment where you need to reach out to them and bring them into bring them to the decision making table and say, okay, what do you bring? Where are the leverage points you see in your neighborhood? What are the other fights that you also see as your fights?
So what's an example? So when we talk about leverage points, I can understand that term. Give us an example from your work where it's like, oh, somebody from the community who said, like, oh, here is someplace we can move things.
I think Charlie has something
like
that.
I mean, we see these social movements kind of move in waves in a way, right? And we see these sort of troughs where nothing seems to be happening, but where work like Deja is doing, and like we're trying to do in D.C., of building a local infrastructure and having people be invested for the long term is really important. And then we see these crests where suddenly everything seems to be happening all at once. And that's what we saw with the Dakota Access Pipeline battle last year when, you know, this pipeline is something that the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe have been fighting for more than a year before it got into the news. But they, you know, they were smart. They used social media and they used the opportunity to develop this protest camp that made international headlines and stayed in the headlines for months. And that was a moment that was in part something that they worked really hard to help create, but also did happen in a way organically that brought so many thousands of people out of the woodwork into this movement. And that, you know, that lasted through the election. And I helped organize, and Anthony was there too, helping organize different marches and protests in D.C. with 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 people. But then come January, once it was clear that, you know, the Standing Rock camps were going to be shut down and the leaders there were telling people, you know, go home, it's winter, we're going to move to the next phase. We had to figure out collectively how we were going to keep that energy going in a slow burn until the next moment we can have to really rise up. And that's how DC Reinvest came about. That's how we decided we need that local power, that local sort of grassroots development to keep us in a place where we can come together again the next chance we get.
So how do you do that? I was thinking when you're talking about Naomi Klein saying, hey, you know, Trump, these folks, they're the resistance. We're what's really moving forward in humanity. But, you know, the Dakota Access Pipeline, that was a huge movement, but, you know, it got approved, right? We have Scott Pruitt coming out, rolling back the Clean Power Plan, saying, you know, the war on coal is over. Social change goes forward and it takes steps back. But how when you're trying to maintain that sense of vision and to inspire other people to keep doing the work or to enter the work for the first time, how do you deal with that gap of those moments?
I think it's looking back at the past and saying how, like, women didn't vote until, like, the Voting Rights Act was passed, and Black people weren't considered people until we had the abolition of slavery, and even then they weren't considered people. But looking back to the past and looking at these different movements, like the civil rights movement, and using that as, like, inspiration to realize that there was a quote by, like, Noam Chomsky saying that kind of, like, everything happens in very small increments until you eventually look back and realize, oh my God, we've had change, and it may not be exactly what we want it to be, but we've seen kind of like some sort of evolution happen. And so looking at that.
Yeah,
and also seeing some of those losses or setbacks as opportunities. I mean, I think when you look at the impact of Standing Rock, I think that for many of our Indigenous sisters and brothers, that was a moment that was a huge leap for Indigenous sovereignty and recognition and the advancement of an uprising for their ancestral lands and rights across the country. And that, though that pipeline at the moment is still running oil, that doesn't mean the battle's over. It means that it's shifted gears and moved on to different turfs. And so you have to be able to, as an organizer, our responsibility for our communities is to be able to weave those pathways and keep the strategy going.
That's the voice of Anthony Torres. Our other guests on today's Your Call are Charlie Jung and Deja Powell. They're all winners of this year's Brower Youth Award from Earth Island Institute, recognizing young people who are taking action to defend the environment and to promote environmental justice. We have about 15 minutes more with them. If you'd like to join the conversation, whether you're an old head in the environmental movement, whether you're someone who's just gaining consciousness about these issues and wants to talk about how do we make change, how do we move forward, the number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email us, if that's easier for you, yourcall@kalw.org. That's yourcall@kalw.org. And we got a comment from a listener who says, any chance your guests can be specific to what they propose as the alternative to capitalism? I think this gets back to the vision question. I understand your thoughts, your thinking about this may still be in development.
Yeah.
But when you talk about people, a vision of an alternative, an economy that serves more people than this one does.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
I think it's a more democratic process of doing things. Like, first of all, we shouldn't be having corporations that can pay for politicians to vote on things that benefit these corporations and not just the country in general. I've looked and did a lot of reading or some reading kind of into socialism and communism, and I think people are really afraid of communism, but if they actually kind of like learn the basics of just like what that looks like and not looking to countries that have failed or that are like authoritarian, but just kind of like trying to find a way to increase every individual's vote in this country, I think matters. And that's a start. Like Bernie Sanders, I'm reading his autobiography, Our Revolution, and he kind of proposes just universal health care, all these things to bring back, I guess, faith in just like people and communities and just their voice, and increasing that voice that they have is one step. Because, yeah.
Anthony?
Yeah, my response to that question, I mean, I think that's something on all of our minds always. But I think, you know, so much of this fight is being able to view capitalism and white supremacy as a tool of elites to divide and conquer us. And our fight to replace those systems is actually, you know, we have those ideas. I think many of us are living them in our communities or waging them in our fights. And for one, I think it's, again, a values statement. Capitalism and white supremacy values a few at the exploitation of the many. And when you turn that on its head and really say, you know, actually, we're going to be fighting for a democracy, an economy, an environment for all people, that's inherently being subversive, not just in your philosophy, but in your actions. And then I'd say, you know, the tangible alternatives that we have on the table, in addition to what Deja was just mentioning with healthcare for all, a healthcare system for all, you know, in the climate and environmental sphere, you know, we do have alternatives on the table, such as a new approach to trade that doesn't privilege the rights of multinational corporations. We have...
Or hurt farmers in Mexico, because NAFTA.
Exactly, yes. That forces people to migrate while, you know, granting corporations to pollute and displace jobs wherever they'd like. And then at the same time, you know, the ideas that don't just allow the market to do it as its will, to just build renewables at a pace that doesn't meet our challenge. We have to be thinking about nationalizing the fossil fuel industry and public ownership of our utilities and allowing for energy, true energy democracy. You know, these are solutions that I think all three of us here are working on that are anti-capitalist and that are actually creating a new system. And I think, Charlie, you know, especially your work is very much about reinvesting in a system change.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, Scott Pruitt, the head of the EPA right now, you know, announced on Monday that he was going to end the war on coal by repealing this Clean Power Plan, this federal rule to reduce emissions from power plants, and that's objective, you know, that's abjectly false. What he's really trying to do is continue to feed or work on what we're talking about, capitalism, and feed the profits of of, in this case, coal CEOs who in this system are able to profit at the expense of their workers, coal miners, power plant workers, and so forth.
Yeah.
And imagine if we had a government that instead said, you know, we're going to embrace this revolution that we're seeing in energy which we need if we're going to stop climate change. And what we're going to do is we're going to invest billions, trillions of dollars in ensuring that these workers who are losing their jobs from the decline of the coal industry right now, and it's true, it's happening, mm-hmm. but we're going to make sure that they have the opportunities to keep good paying jobs in maybe other industries, to be a part of this transition, to ensure that their lives aren't hurt by the efforts that we're all taking.
I want to actually bring in an email from a listener who says, I hope the youth are aware of young people's habits of buying pizza, fast food items, et cetera, all of which have items made from oil, such as plastic, utensils, dividers, condiment packets, all made in the billions yearly and used oil to produce. Thank you, Denise. And maybe I broaden it a bit. There is a sense in which most people who live in our society, we're part of some of this stuff that goes on. It's not purely the culprits. There's a world we live in and participate in a lot of ways,
yeah.
which is dependent on fossil fuels in this kind of economy.
Yeah.
How do you talk to people about that? And, you know, what's your way of approaching that?
Oh, man, that's difficult because I look at the food system and industrial agriculture and the environmental impact, the impact from just kind of like migrant farm workers. There are a lot of issues with our food system, and yet I continue to participate in it by eating meat, by consuming berries that are grown in Washington State and picked by just under like by people in terrible conditions. And so that's where I feel like it's up to up to the government to step in and say, hey, like, we have these corporations that are like mass marketing and like disillusioning people to think that this food is cheap and okay to eat. And I think that's where we have to, but then that gets into the issue of like cutting freedom of choice and.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are sticky issues. Otherwise,
yeah.
somebody would have found a way to cut through them in a better way.
Yeah, but we didn't live like that before. So we have to, it's possible mm-hmm. to go back, you know, like I think anything is possible. It's just figuring out how to get there.
Yeah, I think that in many ways, you know, it's very important to, as much as we can, live out in our, you know, lifestyles the values that, you know, we're fighting for. But I think in many ways, sort of we have to be wary of over-individualizing responsibility. You know, we live in a system in which capitalism treats us as consumers. And if we only act and try to leverage ourselves as consumers, we're only feeding into that same system. So for me, that's what made me jump from sort of working on sustainability and lifestyle activism into actually doing direct action. We need political power. We need mass movements that are taking the resources and the decision-making monopoly that many of these CEOs and many of these politicians have on our decisions, because we didn't just individually choose to start using plastics and eating hamburgers. Those were given to us. In many ways, we don't have a choice. Those are the only, some neighborhoods, those are the only things that are at the table.
Yeah.
And so we actually have to be changing our politics if we're going to be reaching that goal and doing leaps and bounds. Otherwise, one person by one person is not going to be enough and not enough time.
But in terms of meeting people where they live and talking about how the system works, I mean, this is a place you can actually say, hey, I mean, and like you're saying, maybe not pointing the finger at people. It's partly saying, what do we participate in? I don't know, Charlie, how you think about that in terms of bringing it home to people in communities, their actual lives?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky question. And you know, I think, so in D.C., one of the parts of our campaign right now is actually encouraging people to close their own bank accounts with Wells Fargo mm-hmm. and Citi and other banks that we think are you know, practicing unjustly. But it's hard. It's hard because we live in a society with a concentration of banks that are just more accessible for folks. And not everyone can afford to close their Wells Fargo account and try and go somewhere else because they just, you know, for example, so many people are coming up to us and saying, hey, I have a mortgage that Wells Fargo somehow just up and bought and I didn't even know they have it and I can't get out of that. And, you know, our response is, yeah, because that's how it works right now and it's really awful that it does that. And so what we're trying to do in D.C. is encourage folks that can change their own lifestyles to do so, but also make sure that they're telling us that and that we're recording those names collectively and we're gathering them all together and saying, okay, we're going to take all our thousands of people that are doing this across D.C. and across the country and we're going to bring that to the halls of power and say, look, people are doing this for themselves, but we need you to do this at a much larger scale for everyone.
We got 2 minutes left. I want to hear from each of you something happening right now that excites and inspires you, whether it's in your work, something you've heard about, someone you've connected to through the Brower Youth Awards, something that, you know, you say, hey, you want to point to something and say, here's something that people should know about that they can say, you know what, this is, in fact, is a movement that is growing and active and that you should be aware of. Charlie, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. Actually, one of the other campaigns I'm part of is something called the Sunrise Movement. And it's a new movement of young people across the country trying to stop climate change and create millions of good jobs that we were talking about earlier. And, you know, we're gearing up for a big day of action on November 18th, which is the day after the next climate conference ends.
In Bonn, Germany, right?
The conference in Bonn, Germany. But there's a day of action across the U.S. at state houses and mayor offices across the country, and we're gearing up for that, and so people should definitely sign up for that.
All right, we'll post information about that on our website, yourcallradio.org. Anthony, briefly.
Yeah, right now I'm really excited to see so many of millennials who've led our movements not just taking to the streets but now running for office and beating out corporate Democrats and racist Republicans who've held power for too long.
Yeah.
Deja Pal?
Yeah, I just want to say shout out. I saw on Facebook to the young people in Chicago who were protesting on, I think, the Red Line, protesting against the mayor, Rahm Emanuel, for investing in a police academy and not in schools. I think 50 schools were closed. But yeah, shout out to those kids. Like, use your voice. Because, yeah.
That's the voice of Deja Pal. We've also heard in this hour from Anthony Torres and Charlie Jiang, all of whom are award winners. The Brower Youth Awards, which are going to be given in a public ceremony this upcoming Tuesday, October 17th at Herbst Theater in San Francisco. You can learn all about their work, about the work of the other award winners at yourcallradio.org. That's also where you can get a link to tickets and information if you would like to be part of this ceremony. I want to thank you all for your work.
Thank you.
And for being here. This is a great, this for me, a very exciting and inspiring conversation. So thanks so much, and I wish you the best.
Thank you.
I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, who will be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening.